Worried about letting someone else pick out the perfect avocado for your perfect impress them on the third date guacamole? Well, good thing Instacart shoppers are as picky as you are. They find ripe avocados like it's their guac on the line. They are milk expiration date detectives. They bag eggs like the 12 precious pieces of cargo they are. So let Instacart shoppers overthink your groceries so that you can overthink what you'll wear on that third date. Download the Instacart app to get free delivery on your first three orders while supplies last. Minimum $10 per order. Additional terms apply.
This episode is brought to you by Progressive Insurance. Whether you love true crime or comedy, celebrity interviews or news, you call the shots on what's in your podcast queue. And guess what? Now you can call them on your auto insurance too with the Name Your Price tool from Progressive. It works just the way it sounds. You tell Progressive how much you want to pay for car insurance and they'll show you coverage options that fit your budget. Get your quote today at Progressive.com to join the over 28 million drivers who trust Progressive. Progressive Casualty Insurance Company and Affiliates. Price and coverage match limited by state law.
Tomorrow morning, I've been told, 10 a.m. Eastern. Perfect setup right into, you know, a championship Saturday in college football. Denton and I are going to talk about all of the matchups tomorrow, and I've got a couple of them in the smell test later on in the show. Yes, from Justin on Twitter, Sheehan. The hair on the back of my neck, straight up listening to Summerall introduce that game in 1986. Yeah, I feel the same way. Those are incredible memories. In 11-2 versus 11-2, and Summerall saying the tickets are impossible to get. Yeah, that's the way it was a long time ago. Craig Hoffman joins us right now because the U.S. takes on the Netherlands tomorrow morning in the knockout stage. And Craig knows about soccer because, well, let me just ask you, before you went to work for the Washington Spirit, were you a big soccer fan?
I would say I was a solid fan. I wasn't someone who was getting up early, watching Premier League on Saturdays, all that kind of stuff. I would watch it sometimes, but definitely a lot more since I went to work there and have left. And I've always had an interest in the game. I played a little bit growing up, but not a ton. I just always found it interesting. Like the world finds this game more fascinating than all of our stuff. Why does everybody else like it? And you watch it enough, and I think you start to understand.
You know, it's interesting that you said that, because one of the reasons personally I've given it a real effort over the last, I would say, 10 years is because of what you just said. I'm interested because of the rest of the world being so interested. And I've spent time in other places during events like the Euro or the World Cup, and I've seen the reaction and been in bars and restaurants and it's fascinating to me. The game itself doesn't do it for me as hard as I've tried, but the pageantry of it and the importance of it makes it attractive. And I'll be watching tomorrow morning. And I guess the first question I would ask is, you know, overall, would it have been a disaster had the U.S. not made it out of their group stage to this stage?
I think in the eyes of many, yes. I think if you're trying to be as fair as possible, they missed the last one, which obviously everyone knows at this point, either because they remember or because they've been reminded of it 1,000 times by Fox's coverage. And if you miss the last one and you make this one, you've already made progress. And I think that they've shown well. I think if they came out and were super disappointing, obviously, there would be repercussions. You know, a lot of people still are not happy with the way this team has been coached in this tournament, despite the fact they made it out. It's kind of one of the reasons why soccer, football is so popular around the world is the game is so random in so many ways that a lot of people, like the fans, just get to, like, talk radio is built for a sport like soccer. Because it's such a random game in terms of the outcomes because of the low scores, et cetera. But directly to the results question of it and whether or not this team has done enough to kind of say, like, yes, they're on the right track. I think so. They are one of the youngest teams in the tournament. And so the fact that they have advanced to this stage, considering the youth, considering their lack of depth in a lot of areas, I do think this has to be deemed a successful World Cup. With that said, they can absolutely win tomorrow. And they've already proven that they are capable of playing with the very best teams in the world, considering how they played against England. So I do think that in some ways their performance has actually raised the stakes a little bit, because I still feel like there's a lot of potential to be unlocked here, and that they could, you know, could, this is always the case in soccer, could explode still and maybe go on a little run here.
Well, the could, you said it at the beginning of your answer. You use the word randomness. And I would ask you, as someone who's really given it a try to really try to understand the, you know, the dog whistle nuance of soccer, it's hard for me sometimes to watch and see another team clearly outclassing or outplaying another team. I mean, the number of shots on goal, I don't want to compare it to hockey because I think there's a randomness to the hockey postseason as well. I mean, a deflection off a skate, off a post. Is it the same kind of thing in soccer?
Yeah, it is. And it's just by the nature of the fact that it's low scoring. Like if you have a sport where games can be, you know, 1-1 with frequency, that means you are one team getting a lucky break, and truly a lucky break. Like nothing great happened, you know, in hockey, a puck hits a rough spot on the ice and kicks past a goalie that's in otherwise perfect position, and it's just bad luck. And if you get a couple of lucky plays the other way, saves, whatever, that's it. You lose. You were the better team. And that's exactly what soccer is, just on a much wider field and, you know, kick off the skates, yada, yada. So that is the randomness. And it's actually, you know, really interesting, Kevin. I've referenced this a couple of times on my show. I am reading this book right now by Ryan O'Hanlon, who's one of ESPN's soccer writers. And he has dove into the analytics side of soccer. And it's really not a book about soccer analytics. It's not like I'm reading formulas. I would fall asleep in 30 seconds if that was the case. But he's telling the stories of all the different people who are trying to break into soccer, which is this incredibly, you know, resistant sport to any kind of new thinking because it is such a, it has such a long history and is so institutionalized in so many ways. But hearing how some of these people are trying to figure out the game and the struggles they have because of the randomness, it's like the best they can do is this stat right now, or, you know, mostly the best they can do is this stat expected goals. And it's only got like a 50.
Explain that.
So basically every shot, it depends on which model you're using. But you know, the most common models are basically shot based, and it's like based off the number of shots taken and where they're taken, and some factor in the traffic in front, some factor in, you know, the, you know, whether or not you were receiving,
so it's
it
like
off
the,
a pass.
The high probability shots.
Yeah.
Versus,
yeah, exactly.
Low probability shots. Okay.
Yeah. That's a good way to put it. And it's only got like a 50% correlation to whether like expected goals to actual goals. And so there's clearly gaps in the data. And if there's that much to learn about the game, we're still learning so much about the strategy and player development and all of these things. So that all contributes to that randomness and trying to figure out like, hey, what's actually, are we even playing this game the right way? Is there a better way? In the same way that, you know, basketball has gone through the revolution with 3-point shot, football has gone through different revolutions in terms of, hey, let's go to the passing game. But even that, you see the change in the NFL now back to the running game, because all those were influenced by the fact that you used to have 330-pound defensive linemen. Now you don't. So maybe we should run at them with our 330-pound offensive linemen. Like some of this stuff is just fascinating in terms of the strategy. And I think the more I've learned about it, the more interested I've become in watching
more. I'm actually
interested
in this. We're talking to Craig Hoffman. Hoffman, 3-6 right here on the Team 980 with his show, and does a really good podcast with Logan Paulson as well. What about the time of possession? Like, isn't that an important statistic? I wouldn't call it an advanced statistic, but is that important? And then where that possession takes place?
Yes. So the last part is actually, from what I've read of this book so far, and I'm most of the way through it, is the more important part. Like how many touches can you get in the final third of the field, the attacking third, where you obviously score 99% of your goals, save the occasional David Beckham kick one in from midfield. So time of possession, though, can be overrated. There have been many teams that have been successful, and you've even heard some announcers, some commentators reference this in the tournament. Oh, they're letting them have possession, because if you choose to play a counterattacking style, you almost want to lull the other team into a false sense of security. You get to a certain area of the field, or you get them to kind of push the ball to a certain area of the field, trap it just like in a full court
and
press in basketball.
And then send somebody out on the fast break.
And then you're going the other way. And in fact, that is probably how the U.S. will play at times on Saturday against the Netherlands, because where we, like, the Netherlands is a fairly slow team. They're an older team in a lot of ways. And the U.S. has these guys in Pulisic and, you know, Brendan Aaronson when he comes in off the bench, but Weston McKennie and, you know, even Serginho Dest, one of their fullbacks, one of their outside backs. Like, these guys are so fast that if they can get out in space, Tim Weah, obviously one of their forwards, like, these guys get out in space and they can get a numbers advantage and create a good shot, and get that transition play. So, definitely the possession is important. I am a fan of possession on some level, because the one way to guarantee the opponent won't score is to have it. However, if you just keep possession for the sake of having it, it doesn't actually translate to anything. The correlation in terms of percentage, you know, of the ball you keep and wins is not super, or not as high as you might think. But ultimately, if you can get possession and push forward and play like the U.S. did in the first half against Iran, where you both dominate possession and really stress defenses, then you're in great shape. And you know, the U.S. should have had two in that first half. They were offsides by a piece of fabric on that the second one. But
yeah, and they were really getting pushed there at the end. I actually thought, and I was surprised, that I thought the guy got pulled down in that penalty kick area.
Yeah.
There in stoppage time, and they, you know, I guess they had a chance to go look at it and with some sort of review. I want to stick with this for just one more second on,
sure,
on sort of some of the strategy. One of the things in watching it, I just think that you have to get into that third of the field, because I would imagine a lot of opportunities for an actual goal come on penalty kicks. And if the ball's not in that general area, you're not going to draw that. And it just seems like there's a lot of opportunity, you know, when you're in that area to just draw a foul, and have that opportunity, which is clearly, right, penalty kicks are, what's the percentage of makes? It's clearly north of 50-50.
Yeah, I think it's like 70-something. I don't remember the exact number off the top of my head.
And then what's the percentage of goals on corner kicks? I mean, that's really low, I know, but how much better of a chance does a team have to score on a corner kick versus in the regular, you know, flow of the game?
Of course, I don't have the penalty stat off the top of my head, and I do have the corner kick stat because I just read it in this book. Corner kicks are about 2.5%.
Yeah, right.
Which is way higher than any other shot. Set pieces are actually probably the biggest inefficiency in the sport. They have been kind of taken for granted by coaches for a long time, that there's this thought, and some of this goes back to, you know, the cultural elements of it, right? Like, it's the beautiful game and it's supposed to be flowing and active, and this is the time that it resembles American football and we stop down and we have coordination. And frankly, some of the best teams in the world on the club side of things have actually brought in American football coaches and basketball coaches for some of their set piece work, because they're like, okay, you guys know how to get people open. You guys know how to do this.
Picks with right.
100%. And we've seen that in this tournament. We've seen guys get leveled by picks in this tournament. I'm like, that's awesome. Let's go. Let's innovate. And so set pieces, obviously, though, are random. Right? It could be from 18 yards out on the right. It could be from 25 yards out on the left. It could be from 30 yards straight on. They're all over the place. It's wherever the foul happens. Corners are the same spot every time. It's the right one or the left one. And it's the same exact thing. So it is the thing that most resembles, say, a football play that, you know, you can run the plays from anywhere on the field, but you like start at a line of scrimmage and then there's some amount of yardage that you run. And then, you know, there's different combinations and whatever. In soccer, the only time that you have some kind of real space adjacent, similar timed type of thing is on a corner kick. And so they're incredibly valuable. Teams should absolutely push up into the final third and put pressure on defenses more for to try to draw set pieces, to try to one. Also, obviously, the closer you get, the easier the shot is, and get corner kicks based off of all of the available data. And yeah, you're 100% right. And
irony of that is, as you referenced, you know, is sort of the condescension that we get sometimes in these conversations as Americans, the continuous beautiful game, and yet the most exciting opportunities. And by the way, the fans get excited, the players get excited, is when the game stops for a corner kick. because you've got a higher chance of actually seeing a shot on goal and perhaps even a goal. All right, so you think they've got a shot tomorrow against the Netherlands. Why?
They do. They absolutely do. And there's both like eye data and analytical data to suggest that. Even though the Netherlands won their group, that expected goal stat that I talked about earlier, they actually gave up more expected goals than they did scored. Again, the randomness of the game, small sample size. That's the kind of thing that can happen in soccer with regularity. Strategically, though, Sebastian Salazar from ESPN was on my show yesterday talking about this, the speed element of it. The Netherlands is not a very fast team. They lack team speed. The U.S. has it in droves.
So is that unusual for them?
Yeah, a little bit. They've had a lot of players over the years that are incredibly athletic. And it's not like they completely lack it. They've got this kid, Gapko, who is... Cody Gakpo, who is just ridiculous. He was in great form for PSV, his club, and has come in and he scored in every game of the tournament. So he obviously is a guy that they've got to contain. And they've got, you know, they've got experience. Luke de Jong is another great player. Virgil van Dijk is their captain, and he's a center back that plays for Liverpool in the Premier League and is just incredible and has been a mainstay for them for a long time. And they just haven't, you know, they've got talent. They're probably a more talented team overall, but do they have the style? You know, styles make fights. Do they have the style that can actually play with this U.S. side who is playing, kind of maximizing their talent, at least for first halves? The depth, I think, is what has killed them, where they've brought in some subs that have not performed particularly well. And, you know, then do they have the team speed if a guy like Pulisic or Weston McKennie gets out in space and starts a run to keep up? Can they get the numbers back if the U.S. can get out on the break? So that is, you know,
if they
the US,
win, it could be a matchup with Messi.
Or it should be incredible.
Which would be incredible in a quarterfinal match. All right, I know you've got to run. I've got two quick ones for you.
Yeah.
Number one is, I'm just curious, because I didn't follow this. I just saw it late last night, that Spain lost to Japan, which knocked Germany out. I mean, is there any sort of, you know, is that suspicious that maybe Spain didn't want Germany to advance?
No, I mean, those types of things have happened in the past, but it's typically been more of two teams that know that they're through with a draw play to a terrible draw. And what FIFA has done, and one of the rare bright things FIFA has done, is they had the simultaneous kickoffs. So those two games were happening at the same time. And so Spain did not necessarily
Spain didn't have to win or draw to advance.
Correct, because they had done their work previously. So actually, no, I guess if Spain, by kickoff yesterday, Spain knew that if they lost, Germany wasn't through. But, I mean, teams aren't trying to lose at this point in the tournament because they want to stay in good form.
All right, most importantly, who do you got Sunday?
I actually think I have Washington Sunday. I like, after talking with Logan Tape in the podcast, which is out as of this morning, if folks want to check it out, I think they should beat the Giants twice. Like, I know the Giants are getting a lot of guys back, and that could change the equation, but, like, it's a good matchup for Washington.
What did Logan say with respect to last week? You know, he jumped on my podcast Saturday. I love him, by the way.
He's so smart.
And he said that this is the team that can run against Washington. The rest of them can't. Like, I was like, really? Like, you don't think San Francisco or perhaps Cleveland with Chubb and Watson back, or Dallas, you don't think they can run? He said, no, this is the team built, you know, with a lot of their outside zone, with a mauling offensive line, with a dual threat quarterback that's going to run it. And he was right. I mean, does he think the Giants have any chance to duplicate what Atlanta did or not?
Not really. The reason being, like, Atlanta is so good at what they do. They run outside zone, and there's nothing you can do about it. And the Giants literally throw everything at you. They run gap scheme. They run inside zone. They run outside zone. They run whatever other run plays you can possibly think of at 6:45 in the morning. Like, they are a do everything team, and they will hit a couple of them, but they don't execute at such a high level that Washington can't just blow it up with Payne and Allen and Sweat and Smith Williams and Tuhill and Chase Young. So, you know, as long as they stay disciplined and do their jobs, they should be all right. And they also figured some stuff out with the quarterback run in the second half last week. Mariota obviously killed them. They started to just say, hey, all right, you know, James is the guy in the end. James, go tackle Mariota,
like,
whether or not
he...
Yeah. Yeah, exactly. And so they take that strategy to Daniel Jones, they should be all right.
Yeah. Thanks for doing this. I appreciate it.
Absolutely, Kevin. Good to talk to you, buddy.
All right, Craig Hoffman, everybody, at Craig Hoffman on Twitter, 3 to 6, Monday through Friday, right here on the Team 980. Yeah, the matchup against the Giants is an interesting one. I will get to next hour my keys to a win over the Giants. I've got some weather information for all of you coming up next. And then Logan Thomas will join us at 7 a.m. Kevin Sheehan Show, the Team 980, theteam980.com. We are free and live on the Odyssey app.
This episode is brought to you by Progressive Insurance. Whether you love true crime or comedy, celebrity interviews or news, you call the shots on what's in your podcast queue. And guess what? Now you can call them on your auto insurance too with the Name Your Price tool from Progressive. It works just the way it sounds. You tell Progressive how much you want to pay for car insurance, and they'll show you coverage options that fit your budget. Get your quote today at Progressive.com to join the over 28 million drivers who trust Progressive. Progressive Casualty Insurance Company and Affiliates. Price and coverage match limited by state law.
Okay, picture this. It's Friday afternoon when a thought hits you. I can spend another weekend doing the same old whatever, or I can hop into my all-new Hyundai Santa Fe and hit the road. With available H-Track all-wheel drive and three-row seating, my whole family can head deep into the wild. Conquer the weekend in the all-new Hyundai Santa Fe. Visit HyundaiUSA.com or call 562-314-4603 for more details. Hyundai, there's joy in every journey.
We really need new phones.
T-Mobile will cover the cost of four amazing new iPhone 15s, and each line is only $25 a month.
New iPhone 15s? It's better
over here. Only at T-Mobile, get four iPhone 15s on us and four lines for $25 per line per month with eligible trade-in when you switch.
Minimum of 4 lines for $25 per line per month with auto pay discount using debit or bank account. $5 more per line without auto pay, plus taxes and fees. Phone fee at 24 monthly bill credits for well qualified customers. Contact us before canceling account to continue bill credits or credit stop and balance on required finance agreement due. $35 per line connection charge applies. See T-Mobile.com.